In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Do you have an unlimited amount of money or time? If not, then welcome to the world of economics. Now, I know math can be a bit scary for some and even boring for others, but economics is when math meets reality. Because if you don't have unlimited time or money, you have to decide how to spend them. And if you spend it on one thing, you can't spend it on another. This is the simple fact of life that seems to escape politicians, who apparently don't like math and don't like reality. This year, Oregon took in a record amount of taxes, more than expected, and it was all thanks to the Trump tax cut, which Oregon decided not to let Oregon-based businesses have. But taking away a tax cut wasn't good enough for Democrats in Salem. Instead, they want to raise taxes by an additional whopping $6 billion, which represents a 29% increase in the general fund. This matters because, well, back to that whole math meeting reality thing. If you're spending more on taxes, it means you're spending less on what could make you more money. It means business owners aren't spending it on their businesses, or hiring new workers, or on raises for current workers. But here's the other part of this. Oregon has decided it will no longer be friendly to business. Oregon itself is a business. I mean, what would you do at a store that made you feel unwelcome, that raised its prices, that when you dared to mention their prices have gone through the roof, they sneer at you and say you should just feel lucky, that it's a privilege to let you in the store at all? How long would that kind of business stay in business? And if you think that's far-fetched, just wait until you hear what one Oregon Democrat senator said when he heard that businesses were being forced out of the state because they could no longer afford to stay. As I said, Oregon itself is a business. Think of the image that it's creating. But here's the weird part in an Orwellian sort of way. When the business lobby heard Oregon wanted to impose a family leave bill, in other words, a tax, they decided to support it. Why? Because they knew that if they didn't, it was going to end up being a ballot initiative. And if that happened, the crazy Portlanders would force a much higher rate than what the legislature had planned. Doing business in Oregon has become a hostage situation. Speaking of ballot initiatives, we have heard that there will be a petition to put the new sales tax, otherwise known as the gross receipts tax, on the ballot to repeal it. We'll have more details on that by next week, but check iSpyRadio.com to stay up to date. On today's show, we'll lift the curtain on Oregon's taxes and the impact they're going to have and how Oregon is once again a petri dish for the left, in this case, socialist economic policies. Those of you listening outside the state need to pay attention to this because we're fighting battles today that you'll soon be fighting in your own states. But it's not all bad news today. We have some great examples of what states ought to be doing and some real success stories. And while sometimes it feels like we're Oliver Twist staring out the windows of the orphanage at kids who are luckier and happier than we are, there is good news in other states, and by watching what they're doing, it can give us something to hope for. I'd like to welcome Jonathan Williams. He is the chief economist for ALEC, that's the American Legislative Exchange Council. He's also the co-author of Rich States, Poor States, an annual report by ALEC of competition among the states and a ranking of their economic outlook. Jonathan, it is always great to talk to you.
Well, hey, Kay, for having me back on the show, and as always, greetings from this land of make-believe here in Washington.
Well, land of make-believe there, this is more of a horror story out here in terms of what's going on with our economy in terms of, and how the Democrats are looking at punishing people for being here. In fact, I will mention one state senator in particular who thinks it's perfectly okay to punish businesses, but we'll get back around to that here in a little bit. I want to start actually with your Rich States, Poor States. You guys do this every year. People can find that at richstatespoorstates.org. You can also find that by going to alec.org. That's ALEC. And we'll link all of that up on ispyradio.com as well. And so how did Oregon do in terms of that?
Well, probably not a shocker, Mark, and to you and your listeners, but Oregon did not do well in rich states, poor states, once again, in our economic outlook ranking. And this is the 12th edition of this report, as you know, coming in 44th place for economic outlook in the bottom 10 once again. And you look at the historic trend there for Oregon is the first year of us putting together this book with Art Laffer and Steve Moore in 2008. Oregon actually ranked 35th, which was his best ranking in all 12 years, deteriorated from there to 39th, and now into the 40s. It has not even cracked back into the 30s since 2009. So once again, a bottom 10 ranking, and based on what I've seen happen in Salem this year, I have a feeling you'll be cemented in the bottom 10 for many years to come, unfortunately.
Wow. No, absolutely. So when you guys did your ranking, that was before a lot of these taxes have passed and are going to pass here in Oregon. Just to read you through some of these, it is really rather shocking. And we dealt with this a week or so ago with Jeff Krop. Right now, family leave, they're adding $1.5 billion. Carbon tax is going to add at a minimum $1.1 billion. There's an employee assessment tax at $500 million, a Medicaid tax at $335 million, a small business tax $130 million, and a kicker cut of $108 million. And so all told, it is $5.673 billion in new taxes counted against the general fund. That is a tax increase of almost 29%. So if you guys had done your ranking knowing that Oregon is likely to raise taxes here by 29%, what exactly would that have done to our outlook?
That's a very good question. I think it would certainly put you in the realm of possibility of competing with New York and New Jersey and Vermont for the bottom several slots in our rankings.
Is it possible to go lower than 50?
Yeah. Well, let's not forget President Obama said there were 57 states, so I guess we could shoot for 57.
Yeah.
I think if you look at it, you look at several of these categories that you mentioned, and you plug those into the way that we rank the states and rich states, poor states, and different tax categories, and whether the gross receipts tax ends up, counting as a sales tax burden, for instance, depending on how census would rank that. And all of a sudden, then it takes away one of the only good things that Oregon had going for it in our ranking, of course, which was going without a sales tax.
Well, on the gross receipts tax, a lot of people do call that a shadow sales tax. In case people missed that previous show, it is a tax on your activity, your gross sales, rather than on your profit. So if it costs you $95 to put out a product that you then sell for $100, you're taxed on the $100, not the $5 that you make in profit. And so this really is a sales tax. I don't know how businesses are going to be able to avoid passing this on in some ways to their customers. Although it's interesting, the governor right now is trying to make it illegal for you to directly pass this on to your consumers. I'm not even sure how she could possibly even do that.
It sounds like she's trying to criminalize the laws of economics here.
Yes.
Businesses don't pay taxes. People pay taxes.
That's right.
And those taxes would be paid by people in some form or another. And so I always find it somewhat comical when elected officials like to try to play that role. And it just never works, obviously.
No, it never does. Getting back to your economic outlook in about a minute here that we have with you, even though we're ranked 44th, our performance has been 7th. That would seem to be a little bit of a discrepancy. How would you explain that?
Right, and we get asked this all the time is, I think there's a couple of things. I've talked to people like Randy Posdina, and, he said, Oregon was so far behind in performance in past years that there's some catch-up performance certainly that's happening. But I think we look at the actual migration trends and why is Oregon an in-migration state and why is capital still going to Oregon in some cases is the largest beneficiary, that Oregon's largest beneficiary of California's out-migration,
yes.
Or I should say the huge beneficiary of California's out-migration, because that's usually the number one piece when you look at whether it's capital or people voting with their feet away from California. And if they want to stay on the Pacific coast, they want to go to a state without a sales tax during retirement years, that's where they look in many cases. And so I think it's somewhat, you get the benefit of California being even worse for the moment when it comes to its business climate.
We're not quite as bad as California. I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back. We'll have more with Jonathan Williams of ALEC. That's American Legislative Exchange Council. You can visit them at alec.org. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today to Jonathan Williams. He is the chief economist for ALEC, that is American Legislative Exchange Council. You can find their website at alec.org. That's ALEC.org. They also have a really great website to dig into some of the policies and whatnot that Oregon is suffering through, richstatespoorstates.org. You can find out how Oregon ranks among the other states. And that really is what the states are, as we've said many times here, is that they're 50 test tubes of democracy, but also of economics. And one of the things that we want to follow up on from the last segment there is we now have this sales tax coming through, this stealth sales tax, as a lot of people are calling it, because it's a tax on your gross receipts of a business rather than on your profits. And I know that you guys do your rankings as of January 1. That was clearly before any of these taxes are starting to kick in. How will you guys look at that particular sales tax? Because it's not technically a sales tax, and yet it is because it's based on your sales. How does that figure in?
Right. And so while it's not a retail sales tax that compares with many of the other states, we measure gross receipts taxes like this in a couple of different ways. And it depends how the U.S. Census Bureau classifies them. Either we'll count them as a add-on to the corporate tax, or we'll categorize them as a sales tax burden. And it all depends on what U.S. Census Bureau decides to do with it. And so it's clearly, though, I mean, I think you make the correct point that gross receipts taxes are a stealth sales tax. And just knowing the years of history of people opposing sales taxes in Oregon, it really does surprise me that the new expanded left-wing majorities there in Salem were to go down that road. I mean, the allure of it, of course, is saying it's such a low rate. It's such a low rate, and businesses will be fine with this. And of course, then the thing for me, from an outsider, that struck me as completely wrongheaded was how some in the business community were advocating for this because they were getting their carve out. And then they could say, you know, certainly, hey, this is only a low rate on everybody else. But the experience of other states that have gone down this road with gross receipts taxes, like your neighbors to the north in Washington State, has been they've been a horrible complexity put on the business community. And then, of course, the well-connected with great lobbyists around the state capitol, surprise, surprise, get carved out of it. And everybody else, including many small businesses and startups, pay the brunt of the bill, unfortunately. And that's horrible for entrepreneurship and overall business competitiveness.
Yeah, it really does feel like the lawmakers here want to punish businesses. And as you say, that there are certain carve-outs. Nike got a carve-out, I believe. Intel got a carve-out. It's anybody that when you're selling outside the state, you do get these carve-outs. And it feels often that you're punishing businesses for daring to do business here. And it was interesting. There was a one of the companies that has already announced that they're going to pick up stakes and leave is Stimson Lumber. And they've been here in Oregon for more than 100 years. And it was interesting to see some of the responses there by the owner itself in terms of what this is going to happen here to do to their business. They already announced that they're going to close one of their businesses up in the Willamette Valley. And Mr. Miller is the owner, and he specifically mentioned some of the other taxes that are already out there that have been impacting their business for some time. Back in 2015, they passed the clean fuels tax. That drove up fuel prices by 22 cents a gallon just in that first year. It's going up again this year. They now have passed this gross receipts tax. It's going to raise billions of dollars. And they're not even dealing with, and all of these taxes aren't even doing anything to PERS, to offset that, or some of the other rising health care costs, which we have also added a tax onto. But I'd like to read this little excerpt from this letter and get your response to it. This is Andrew Miller, the owner of Stimson Lumber, saying, State Senator James Manning was quoted last week on the Senate floor saying, let them leave. Somebody else will come in, referring to Oregon's business community leaving the state under hostile conditions, Miller said. I wonder what Senator Manning would say to the 60 families without jobs tonight. I wonder if he would have the same tone with a family left, wondering how they will pay the mortgage and put food on the table. Are their livelihoods less important than his? Unfortunately, this is what it's come to here in Oregon. Stimson Lumber was able to weather even the Great Depression without laying anyone off, but that is no match for the damage that elite urban politicians have inflicted on rural Oregon. So what's your response to that?
Oh, it's just sickening to see comments from people who are supposedly elected to represent individuals and families in the state, to have that kind of a callous reaction to hardships, real hardships that are now going to be faced by families and individuals, and perhaps mortgages that are not going to be able to be made, and food that's not going to be on the table because these jobs have gone away because of bad policies. I mean, this is the epitome of liberal elitism,
yes,
if you ask me, because, you know, their reaction is going to be, well, join one of our big government programs. We have a handout for you, then, you know, come on in and the water's warm. Well, we should be encouraging people to actually go out and produce things and make things and grow the economy. And unfortunately, people are all too ready to accept the fate that, you know, businesses should leave, and then we'll just hook everybody up to a government program, and aren't we all better off?
Well, I think that's been really interesting to see how some of these businesses are responding to this. I attend a weekly business meeting of business leaders in Salem, and it's not exactly a secret group, but you're supposed to not talk too much about what happens there, certainly nothing specific. And it's been interesting to hear some of them talk about some of the things that they're hearing, not just in their own industry, but some of these other ones. There have been multiple businesses that have already started to leave the state that are picking up and reincorporating in other states. Even though they still do business here, they're trying to escape these taxes. And do Democrats, I mean, here we have a Democrat that is recognizing the fact that this is going to punish businesses, and yes, some will leave. But it's that arrogance that really gets to me, is that they're doing this to punish the wrong kinds of businesses and to hopefully encourage the right ones. Is this a new trend nationwide?
Yeah, well, no, that's kind of the big government, the anti-free market analysis is we should be subsidizing the type of businesses we want. We should be discriminatorily taxing the businesses we don't want, because government knows best, not the individual. That's the big conflict of visions, if you will, between the states that are growth states, that are free market states, on the one hand, that are taking that the opposite view of that and saying, let the best man and women win who creates and innovates and provides better goods and services for people. And then you have the approach of, unfortunately, now Oregon joining the ranks of California and New York and Illinois and states like that want to micromanage the economy. I mean, that's a clear differences that we have. We have, in a way, a balkanization effect happening right before our very eyes across these 50 test tubes, as you say, and states moving in one direction, even more free market. We can talk about some of those success stories that have been happening this year in some of the free market states, and then others continuing to double down on this dangerous view of the economy.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about some of those success stories. We're going to take a break here and come back. We'll have more with Jonathan Williams, Chief Economist for ALEC. Stay with us. And welcome back. Talk today to Jonathan Williams. He is the Chief Economist with ALEC. That's the American Legislative Exchange Council. Every year they put out Rich States, Poor States. It's an annual report on competition among the states and a ranking of their economic outlook as well as their performance. Jonathan, we were talking in that last segment about the right businesses and how the Democrats now in Salem are looking to use the tax code to punish businesses that they don't like. And I think this is really setting a dangerous precedent on a number of levels, not least of which in the fact that, I mean, this is clearly going against free market principles, that you open the doors and let people do the businesses that they want, and that there's a whole there's a niche within the economy that they are then filling. I can't see that this sort of thing where it really seems to expand on the whole notion of winners versus losers, is what I'm seeing. Normally when you hear that there's winners versus losers, it tends to be within a business industry, and because, you know, the lobbyists for business A are more successful than business B. Business B ends up not being able to compete as well, and so they end up having to leave the market, and they're the loser. This, though, is like entire business segments. They just simply don't want logging anymore, and so they're going to drive you out of state. I mean, I can't see that this is going to bode well here in Oregon.
No, absolutely not, especially since you have so many of your homegrown industries that seem to be within the crosshairs. And this is something that we've seen in some other of the kind of states that are moving in this direction of really what it is, Mark, as you know, is central planning.
Yes.
I mean, we know how this ends up. Government's just not that good at micromanaging a complex economy. We have plenty of experiences from not only the states, but of course, countries that have gone even further down this path of socialism and central planning. And we know how it ends. It's just the problem as, you know, with, you know, it does take time, unfortunately, for people to see the results of policies. And these were just, I think the way to explain it, quite frankly, is, you know, states like Oregon right now are planting a lot of seeds that they may take time to germinate and grow, but they're going to be very unhealthy when they do end up becoming adult plants and start bringing, you know, some bad things for the future of, you know, entrepreneurship, of job creation, and the future of the Oregon economy.
Well, and what gets me, too, is that you've got the arrogance of these central planners, and they really seem to be ignoring some basic economic principles in the sense that they're doing away with Oregon's competitive advantage. For example, we had the no sales tax, and that brought in a lot of business here. You know, people in Washington used to love to cross over into Oregon. Same thing from Idaho and California, who all have sales taxes, and they'd come over here and buy business or buy goods and services and whatnot. And then I have to pay for those. And so that's helping Oregon. Same thing, though, when you look at things like the timber industry. Oregon is unique in the sense that, I mean, Douglas fir just grows like weeds out here. This is something that we ought to be able to harvest. This is something that we're uniquely positioned because of our environment. And yet these central planners in Oregon don't seem to want to allow us to do that. And yet at the same time, they're also upset that we've got all these plastic bags clogging the ocean. Again, if you're not going to focus on what makes Oregon successful, it seems to me eventually you're going to make it not successful.
Well, right. I mean, what's the business plan, so to speak, for Oregon to attract individuals and businesses and capital at this point? If you're going to shoot yourselves in the foot when it comes to your comparative advantages as a state and your homegrown industries, and then with the advantage of no retail sales tax, and now that's starting to really erode away pretty quickly, because if the camel's nose is under the tent when it comes to a quote-unquote low-rate gross receipts tax, I mean, really, let's ask ourselves the honest question. It's how long will it be before, let's say, we have an economic downturn, we have a budget crisis, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste, and then to say, oh, well, we just need a 1% retail sales tax. We already have really a sales tax on business, so this is really nothing new. I can see that argument coming in the not-so-distant future, unfortunately. And then, of course, I mean, the other issue, as you alluded to with the advantage of no retail sales tax, is many of the retirees. You know, we talked about the in-migration into Oregon. Many of them are retirees from California coming because they know in retirement, generally, you're not earning as much. So they aren't as worried, let's say, about an income tax as they are about consumption, because in retirement, people consume earnings, of course, that they made earlier in their career. And if that was one of the big deciding factors for why to move to Oregon to avoid California's high sales taxes, maybe that spigot is turned off and that in-migration stops. And of course, that's a huge, huge problem long term.
Well, sure, because they're not moving here. They're not buying houses. They're not buying groceries. They're not paying for utilities and everything else. And I think that could certainly harm us long term. In terms of what the state ought to be doing, because you're going to be out here next week meeting with some lawmakers, and what are some of the things that you're going to be advising some of these Republicans to be doing? Because right now, what I'm hearing from a lot of Republican leaders is, oh, well, we just need to let this burn and we'll just let it destroy itself. And I don't see that as a viable strategy, because number one, they seem to be making the assumption that Democrats will somehow bear the blame for this. That doesn't often happen, certainly not in Oregon, when you've got a very Democrat-friendly media that is going to say that, well, the Republicans should have stood up more or blame the Republicans any other way. So what are some of the things that you're going to be advising these Republicans?
Well, there's a few. There's actually a long laundry list, given all the bad things that have happened recently. But certainly, if you were to prioritize, I think the issues to tackle would be how do you become a more affordable state for potential new investment, whether it's capital on human or the investment side? And how do you kind of try to make up for the huge unforced errors that were made during this year's session? Some of those things that really stick out, you know, we've seen so many states, you know, repeal their state level inheritance and death taxes. They know it's a job killer. They know it's a huge loser when it comes to people leaving the state towards retirement years and going to states without death taxes. Oregon really stands out as being a state that has kept its death tax. Now, then you look at things like income tax rates, both on personal and business. This gross receipts tax does nothing but hurt that. But we know based on the research, and we know what other states are doing, that they're trying to get the price on work and savings and investment lower in their states to attract more of it. It's basics. But then the other thing outside of taxes that I know we'll get into talking about is the really on Oregon's resume, there's a huge problem in that we know all the current tax statistics and there's really bad stories there. But what about expectations of future taxes? And what I mean by this is when you have multi-billion dollar unfunded pension liabilities and liabilities in the OPEB liabilities for healthcare for state workers that are hanging over Oregon that are not materialized yet, but we know they're going to be paid at some point because they're defined benefit plans. Those are things that businesses look at to say, do I really want to sign up to invest in a state that has high taxes right now and has the promise of future taxes, certainly in the future, when it comes to a pension and OPEB liability? So how is it that Oregon starts to unravel this knot when it comes to the huge problems, both for taxpayers, for business investment issues, but as well as for workers? Is how do you make sure that those pension funds are actually going to be there for workers, and that is by making some reforms like other states have made.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Oregon seems to be terrified of making any changes whatsoever to PERS. All right, let's take a break there. More with Chief Economist at ALEC, Jonathan Williams. Stay with us. And welcome back, Dr. David Jonathan Williams. He is the Chief Economist for ALEC. That's American Legislative Exchange Council. You can find them at ALEC.org. And we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. So, Jonathan, we're talking during the break there about some of these success stories. So what are other states and other businesses doing in those other states?
Well, so we've seen this year has been a tremendous year for state-level tax reductions. So I hate to be too doom and gloom and just talking about the big, you know, government central planning states, but I did reference earlier, I mean, there are this cadre of states that are continuing to push the envelope in the right direction when it comes to becoming more free market and more pro-taxpayer. And those are states like Florida and Texas, of course, that have been well known as no personal income tax states that are doubling down on cutting taxes. Just this last fall, Florida voters with something like 65% of the vote statewide passed a supermajority requirement to raise any tax or fee. So a phenomenal new job at two-thirds majority in the state of Florida. But, you know, in terms of states actually cutting taxes, this has been something we just documented in our annual report, the State Tax Cut Roundup. We look at the 2018 legislative sessions comprehensively and found that 16 states substantially cut taxes in 2018. And part of this is because the very strong federal economy, revenues are coming in, states are seeing surplus dollars come in. There's this really the effect of federal tax reform that I know we've talked about before, and a lot of people forget about this, but state income taxes link directly in almost every case to the federal income tax code. And when changes happen, like President Trump's tax reform that has been so good for the federal competitiveness, it also gave states a huge opportunity to cut their own taxes and give them ongoing unbudgeted surpluses because of this linkage to the federal tax code. Unfortunately, states like Oregon have decided to pocket this and then raise taxes additionally. Yes. But the 16 states, a vast majority of those, were driven by this idea of federal tax conformity and the surplus dollars that that meant for those states. And what are they doing? They're cutting income taxes, the most damaging form of tax at the state level. So we're seeing states double down in many cases to make themselves more competitive. And that's really exciting to see, because for every Oregon or for every Illinois or New Jersey out there, we've got states like Tennessee and Texas and Florida and Utah and Idaho doing the right thing.
Well, and you know, that gets back to the whole notion of competition, where you've got a store on one side of the street, they're saying 20-30% off, and you've got Oregon on the other side of the street that's saying, well, guess what, everything's going up 29%. So, you know, your business, which of those states are you going to settle in?
Basic economics 101. This is not rocket surgery, as Laffer always says. This is, when you tax something, you get less of it. When you tax something less, you get more of it. And for the life of me, I don't know how some state policymakers think when you tax something and put the price higher on something, you're going to get more demand for that thing. And I just, for the life of me, I think maybe they just didn't take economics or basic financial literacy courses.
Well, you know, it's more about feelings. It's how you feel about businesses and, you know, getting back to the right businesses versus the wrong ones. And we're going to drive out the ones that don't align with us politically or don't, you know, respect the environment the way that we think that they ought to, even though that, you know, as a timber company, you kind of have to make sure that trees are going to grow back in 20 years. And so anyway, in terms of competition, you mentioned the fact that Oregon did not let businesses keep that Trump sales, the Trump small business cuts. In fact, Oregon made record amounts of revenue. And yet, even on top of that, they're looking at doubling down, getting more revenue. And yet there's been not a whisper of any cuts whatsoever. I can't imagine that, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, this is going to be a good situation for Oregon if all we do is keep spending.
Oh, right. I mean, and, you know, this is just a kind of outlier effect right now. And states are generally arguing over, do we just keep the extra surplus dollars and spend it, or do we give it back in tax relief? That's been one of the huge debates across every state capital this year. Where Oregon, it didn't seem like that was ever really a debate. It was, you know, how much do we raise taxes, right? And so it's just the posture there, where this is once in a blue moon type opportunity where state lawmakers had ongoing unbudgeted revenue because of the linkage to the federal tax code. This is one time, and the last time was 1986 with the Reagan tax reform, that this happened, to cut taxes when it doesn't cost you anything. And even then, Oregon couldn't realize this opportunity to snatch some sort of victory out of the jaws of defeat when it comes to competing with other states.
Yeah. Well, I just think how that really would have helped Oregon attract some more businesses if they had, you know, like these other states, they had doubled down on those taxes, not only allowed those to go through from the Trump tax cuts, but then, you know, do some additional tax cuts as well. But that would have meant that we would have had to cut some spending, and I just don't think that they were willing to do that. Let's go ahead and take a break a little bit early, because I want to talk to you about the effect of the Trump economy and some of the things that we've been seeing. I certainly want to get your response to the job numbers that just came out. So everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Alex, Chief Economist, Jonathan Williams. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. Talking economics today with Jonathan Williams. He is the Chief Economist for ALEC, that is American Legislative Exchange Council. Their website is alec.org, A-L-E-C.org. Also be sure to visit richstatespoorstates.org. For their annual report on state competitiveness. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about Trump's economy. And it's really, you know, we talked about it a little bit in the last segment there, how some states doubled down on Trump's tax cuts and further cut their own taxes to attract more businesses. Oregon, unfortunately, decided not to do that. In fact, they refused to let small businesses take those tax cuts. It's good for Oregon in terms of there was record amounts of revenue pouring into the state coffers. But it's bad for Oregon businesses because they weren't able to use that money to reinvest in their own businesses, pay down debt, take out new loans, or God forbid, hire new workers. So in terms of what other states are doing, you know, you're obviously seeing, you know, better economies there. But in terms of the Trump economy itself, let's look at that, because I continue to be shocked, even in the wake of today's numbers, this week's numbers about the job increases. It came in like 100,000 fewer than what they were expecting. Let's first get your thoughts on those. Why did they miss that number so badly?
Well, you know, there's always a bit of a problem in forecasting, and there's always an issue when it comes to these numbers get revised later. So these are not the final numbers that we're going to see. It's possible that they get revised upwards significantly in future weeks. In fact, in many cases, we've seen the estimates come in way under what the actuals were. And this has been happening month and month, and in some cases, quarter after quarter on some of the other numbers that we've seen, where people have continually underestimated this long recovery that we've been able to enjoy because of tax reform and regulatory relief. I think we'd be clearly in the red right now as an economy if we hadn't seen those things to help revive the U.S. economy. So I think it's a question of, you know, this is, we're pushing the envelope on economic recovery, and good policy coming from Washington has been very helpful in many regards. You look at the numbers, you know, the May jobs report, where it's still in the positive by 75,000 in terms of monthly job growth. Let's not forget the direction of this.
That's right.
We're not talking about a loss in jobs. We're talking about fewer than projected. And then you look at unemployment. Unemployment is still at a 49-year low of 3.6%. And you look at hourly pay, we're still in a very positive growth in terms of average hourly pay. But when you look at selected industries and where the monthly job growth numbers were, the biggest loser is actually government here. This is not, in many cases, where you see professional and business services way up, education and health services way up, leisure and hospitality still way up. The big loser was retail, trade, and government. So that helps explain a little bit of the context. But let's not forget the overall story, that this is a long, long recovery, the longest of anybody's lifetime, basically, right now when it comes to the market. And it's remarkable that we're still in the positive territory this far into recovery. And let's just manage expectations that, you know, let's be glad that we're still moving in the right direction here.
That's right. Because it wasn't that long ago that we weren't seeing job increases of just 75,000. We were seeing job losses of 75,000, 100,000, 200,000. So you're right. It's important to keep this in context. I do continue to be amazed, though, about the Trump economy. As you mentioned, this has been it's astonishing, really, how long this has been going. Is he doing something that other presidents have never done before? Because I continue to be amazed at how, not only how well the economy is doing, but how well it's been doing for as long as it has been.
Well, one thing that President Trump has going for him is people also, you know, this is Ronald Reagan benefited from this tremendously, was Ronald Reagan got to follow Jimmy Carter in office. And President Donald Trump gets to follow President Barack Obama in office. And of course, during the Obama years, we had a much different philosophy when it comes to business, more of an Oregon philosophy when it comes to business versus a free market philosophy. And we have a situation where there was really a war on business in many cases, especially energy and certain types of businesses that the Obama administration did not like whatsoever. And I think just setting the expectations that this administration has done to say, we're no longer adversaries. We want to be helpers of business to grow jobs here in the United States. We want to put the U.S. back on at least an equal, if not a better playing field than our competitors, right? And so just that difference of philosophy, the regulatory relief, the tax relief that followed has been remarkable. But of course, the baseline was we're adversaries to business.
That's
now
right.
We're friends and we want to help job creators move that needle in the right direction.
Yeah, and that right there, I think, is what Oregon is doing in a nutshell. I mean, they are making it clear that they are not friends of business. In fact, they will punish you if you dare to stay here, is how it often feels. One of the things that this job report did do is now all of a sudden is really ratcheting up talk of the Fed may finally cut interest rates. If that happens, well, first of all, do you think that's likely that they're going to cut interest rates? And if so, what will that do for the Trump economy?
Well, it's very possible, I think, that we do see an interest rate cut, or maybe two, between now and the end of the year, is what I'm, conventional wisdom at least, suggests. And certainly that does, you know, allow for more economic growth. It does turn on the spigots a bit more. And I think that you would see some certainly effect by that. The question, though, is whether the market's already expecting it, whether that's already priced in the current numbers. And so it's all about not just what happens, of course, with the Fed, but what the expectations are already built into the market pricing right now. And so on the monetary side, I mean, certainly right now, you look at things like savers have done a little bit better with rates going up from the Obama era, near you know, real zero rates basically for quite some time in the recovery. But then, you know, borrowers were paying more on mortgages and things like that. So rates going down probably does help prop up real estate and certain sectors there, but it certainly has its effect on retirees and savers. So there's going to be some winners and losers. But when it comes to the macro effects, is a lot of this is how much is the market already planning? The Federal Reserve needs to be careful in terms of setting expectations. I think having clear guidelines and signals there instead of being so erratic with their decision making is going to be key to make sure that they don't tip this economy in the wrong direction.
Well, speaking of trying to avoid tipping it in the wrong direction, I'd like to wrap up in the next segment with that, especially in terms of what Oregon should have been doing all this time. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Jonathan Williams. And welcome back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Jonathan Williams. He is the chief economist over at ALEC, that's the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC.org, if you'd like to visit their website. And he's going to be out next week talking with lawmakers here in Oregon. Before we get to that, though, in terms of what Oregon ought to be doing, I'd just like to touch on this notion of what Trump is doing to the economy here. And I do find it's been fascinating, really, to see how people have responded, especially people like myself who have been free traders. Well, we've kind of really shifted that now to fair trade. And that's been pretty clear, is that he's willing to use tariffs. And I think that is something that a lot of us in the past used to look at that and say, oh my gosh, that's a real anathema that we would even think about doing that. And yet tariffs have brought China to the table. They're now bringing Mexico to the table in terms of immigration and stuff. We've always heard that tariffs are bad, but it's clear that using them surgically and willingness to use them has worked. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, so, you know, first of all, you've got the initial effects, and then you have the longer term kind of game theory effects, right? So the initial effects are certainly it has an impact in the markets. We know when these announcements are made, you know, equities take a dive generally. They're afraid of a trade war breaking out on a long-term basis where prices would be raised on both sides in an extended period of time. That's kind of the worst case scenario. You know, nobody wants a trade war similar to what happened, you know, in the early part of the last century. But on the other hand, you have the man of the author of Art of the Deal, right, in terms of President Trump, and bringing trade partners to the table that otherwise would have been unwilling to negotiate through some, you know, strong tactics there when it comes to saying the, you know, tariffs are on the table. I think in some regards, long-term is going to be very effective, right? You look at USMCA, which is the renegotiation of NAFTA. Mm-hmm. I was in Canada recently talking with conservatives in the Canadian Parliament, and they realized that Justin Trudeau basically got a horrible end of the deal on this because they walked away from the table. President Trump said, well, okay, we're going to do this with Mexico alone if you're not want to be part of this. And you can have more unfavorable terms. And guess what? Canada had to come back to the table. And there is the art of the deal. There's a negotiation factor. You know, would China really be talking about renegotiating some of the perhaps special deals that they've had in the past if it wasn't for these type of threats out there on tariffs? I don't know. I mean, I think that's really a question that we're going to have to see how this plays out long term with China. But certainly with USMCA, I think it worked quite well in President Yes. Trump's favor.
Well, it will be fascinating to see how this all unfolds here in the future. But what would a really strong trade deal with China do for this economy? I mean, we've already been on the upswing for, you know, 3 years now. And now with a real genuine trade deal that favors America, in the sense that they're not going to be stealing our trade secrets anymore, that we're not going to be being punished for being within the Chinese market. What do you think that would do to this economy?
Well, I mean, a great free trade deal that, as you point out, would make sure that U.S. companies are not having things stolen, that China is enforcing its laws when it comes to IP protections and things like that. And then just putting kind of the world at ease to say two of the largest economies in the world and the fastest growing economies in the world are going to be back to a good mutually beneficial trade
yes.
relationship.
Yeah, mom and dad aren't fighting anymore.
That's right. And I think that's good for everybody. And I think that could be the thing that really does keep this economic recovery afloat through 2020. We've seen lots of projections saying that 2020 is the year that this maybe we run out of steam. That might be the thing that probably does would then guarantee President Trump's reelection in 2020 with that strong economy and the deal behind them with China to say, we don't want to be adversaries here. Let's work out a deal that's mutually beneficial. Stop doing things to our companies that have not been ethical, and let's make sure America gets a good deal out of this.
Yeah. Well, we've got about 2.5 minutes here with you. It's been interesting to watch all this unfold, and it's made me curious what Oregon would be doing right now if the national economy was not roaring along. And so here's the question. What's going to be the impact of these new taxes here in Oregon? And also, what are you going to be advising those Republicans that you meet with next year and next week?
Well, so, I mean, I think without this strong economy with federal tax reform and those effects all playing out, you know, the question would be probably even worse than what's gone in Salem this year. You'd be talking about, instead of a 20-some percent tax increase, you might be talking about much more severe tax increase. So I think that has been something that's been somewhat of a lifeline, although it hasn't been fully utilized in terms of not allowing small businesses to take the relief and things like that. But, you know, let's not forget, and people aren't going to make these connections on their own. Certainly the liberal media is not going to help people make these connections, but the Trump economy, the strong national economy has been the thing that has drawn a lot of that revenue growth to Oregon right now. But, you know, when you talk to lawmakers, when I'm out next week, I'm going to be talking about, you know, how is it that Oregon goes from digging the hole deeper right now to starting to move in directionally correct position when it comes to policy, standing for principle, not shying away from policy fights, I think is going to be key. I think Salem needs more legislative leaders that are going to take on this fight to say, do we want Oregon to go down further down this role of socialism and central planning, or do we want to save Oregon? We want to make Oregon great again along the states that have decided to use what's going on federally to make themselves more competitive. There's two different distinct paths in the future for Oregon. We need to make sure that state lawmakers are doubling down to say, we can save Oregon, but we got to start now.
Yeah. Well, ironically, it may put Oregon into the role of being avid Trump supporters, because unless the economy keeps booming, adding all of these taxes to Oregon's economy cannot be good and will not be good for sure. Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thanks for having me back as always, my friend.
That is all of our time for today. Just a reminder that it does look like there will be a petition to get the new sales tax on the ballot to try to repeal it. Sometimes you just have to save Oregon from itself, or in this case, save Oregon from the Democrat legislature. We'll have some details in the next week or two. Stay tuned for that. In the meantime, our guest website again is alec.org, but do be sure to check out richstatespoorstates.org. That's richstatespoorstates.org, where Alec has their yearly analysis of the state's economic outlooks. Oregon is 44th. They have really revised that site and made it a lot easier to navigate and find out what's going on. In fact, here's an idea. Go check it out and then send it to your representative and senator. They could use a little dose of reality, and maybe they just might put the brakes on their spending rather than put the brakes on our economy. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.